Volo runs one deadly hand through his silver beard. His eyes flash. The Silver Lords of Norta will not give up their birthrights. Fast as lightning, Farley jumps out of her seat. She spits impressively at Volo's feet. That's what I think of your birthright. The Samos King is, to my infinite surprise, stunned into silence. He gawks at her, mouth agape. I've never known a Samos to be at a loss for words. Rats don't change, Annabelle snarls. She taps one hand against the arm of her chair, the threat clear as day. Not that it affects Farley much. Cal only repeats himself, his voice barely more than a mumble. The hunters have pushed him into a corner.
It can't be done, he says.
Slowly, with finality, Davidson stands from his seat, and I follow suit.
Then we're sorry to leave you like this, he says. Truly, I consider you a friend.
Cal glances between us, eyes running back and forth. I see sadness in him, the same I feel in myself. We share an acceptance, too. This was always the path we chose to walk.
I know that, Cal replies. His voice shifts, deepening. And you should know I don't respond well to ultimatums, friendly or otherwise.
A warning. And not just to us. We step down together, Reds, aligned in our beliefs and our goals. Red uniforms and green, our skin kissed by the same undertones of rose and scarlet. We leave behind the Silvers, as cold and unmoving as if they were carved from stones, statues with living eyes and dead hearts. Good luck, I manage to say over my shoulder, stealing one last glance. Cal responds in kind, watching me go.
Good luck.
In Corvium, when he chose the crown, I thought the world had been snatched away, leaving me to fall through an abyss. This isn't the same. My heart has already been broken, and one night did not sew it back together. This wound isn't new. This ache isn't unfamiliar. Cal is the person he told me he was. Nothing and no one will ever change him. I can love him, and perhaps always will, but I can't make him move when he decides to stay still. The same could be said of me. Farley nudges my hand, a sharp reminder as we walk. Our last request is yet to be made. I turn again, angling my face to him. I try to look as I must. Determined, deadly, an inevitable downfall for the Silver King. But still, Mare, still the girl he loves, the Red who tried to turn his heart.
Will you let Reds leave the slums, at the very least?
Next to me, Farley barks out the rest.
And end conscription.
We expect nothing in return. Perhaps a pantomime of sadness, or another tragic explanation of how impossible such things would be. Maybe even Annabelle chasing us from the room. Instead, Cal speaks without looking at the Silvers on his right, deciding without their input. I didn't know he had it in him.
I can promise fair wages.
I almost scoff out loud, but he keeps speaking.
Fair wages, he continues. Volo blanches, looking disgusted. No restrictions on movement. They're free to live and work where they please. Same for the armies. Fair wages, fair enlistment terms. No conscription.
It's my turn to be caught off guard. I have to blink and bow my head. He returns the gesture.
Thank you for that,
I force out. His grandmother slaps the arm of his throne, indignant.
We're about to fight another war,
she sneers, as if anyone needs reminding of the Lakelander danger. I turn back around to hide my smile. Next to me, Farley does the same. We exchange glances, pleasantly surprised by the acquiescence. It means little in the grand scheme, It could be an empty promise, and it probably won't last. But it serves one purpose, at least. Driving a wedge between the Silvers, putting cracks in an already precarious alliance. The only one Cal has left. Behind me, Cal's voice takes on a dangerous edge as he talks his grandmother down.
I am king, those are my orders, he says to her.
Her response is a whisper I cannot hear, muffled by the groaning noise of the doors as they swing open again and then shut. The receiving hall in front of us is as crowded as before, full of rubbernecking nobles and soldiers, eager to glimpse the new king and his patchwork council. We pass through in silence, our faces blank and unreadable. Farley and Davidson mutter to their officers, relaying our decision. It's time for us to leave Harbor Bay and Norta behind. I unbutton my uniform collar, letting the jacket fall open so I can breathe more easily, unfettered by stiff fabric. Killorn is the only person waiting for me, and he is quick to reach my side. He doesn't bother to ask how the meeting went. Our exit, along with our silence, is answer enough.
Damn it, he growls as we walk, our pace brisk and determined.
I don't have anything to pack. All my clothes are borrowed or easily replaced, even the ones I came to Harbor Bay in. I have nothing in the way of personal belongings, except the piercings in my ear, and the earrings back in Montfort, tucked away in a box. The red stone. The one I couldn't bear to part with. Until now. I wish I had it here, to leave it in his room, on the pillow I slept on. That would be a fitting goodbye, and easier than the one I have to make now. I break off from Farley and Davidson, who are heading for their own rooms at the bottom of the grand staircase. I'll meet you outside in a few minutes, I tell them both. Neither questions my decision or my purpose, letting me go with a wave and a nod. Killorn hesitates on the first step, waiting for an invitation to follow. He'll never get one.
You too, I mutter. This won't take long.
His green eyes narrow, hard as chips of emerald.
Don't let him ruin you.
He's already done what he can to me, Killorn, I say. Maven can't break anything else. The lie soothes him, enough for him to turn away, satisfied with my safety. But there's always something left to be broken. His door guards step aside, letting me turn the knob of his room. I do it quickly, so I can't lose my nerve or change my mind. His cell is not a cell, but a fine sitting room, tucked away on an upper floor, facing the ocean. No bed, just a few chairs and a long couch. Either he'll die this afternoon, and he has no use for sleeping arrangements, or a bed hasn't been prepared yet. He stands at the window, one hand on the curtains, as if to pull them shut.
No use, he mutters, his back to me as I shut the door again. They don't block the light.
I thought that's what you wanted, I reply. To stay in the light? I echo words he said to me months ago, when I was his prisoner, chained to a room like this one, doomed to stare out windows and waste.
We have an odd symmetry, don't we? He says, gesturing to the room with a lazy smile.
I almost laugh at the circumstances. Instead, I sink into one of the armchairs, careful to keep my hands free and my sparks close. I watch him, still at the window. He doesn't move. Or maybe Kalor kings just have similar taste in jail cells.
Doubtful, he replies.
But fine prisons, it seems, are how we show affection. Small mercies for prisoners we can't help but love. His declarations mean nothing to me anymore. I barely feel a twinge, easy to ignore, deep in my heart.
What Cal feels for you and what you feel for me are very different.
Maven laughs darkly.
I would hope so, he says,
running the curtain through his hands again. He glances at my jacket, then at my collarbone, now covered by an undershirt. My brand is hidden away.
When will it be?
He adds, his voice going soft. The execution. I don't know. Another tainted laugh. He starts to pace, hands folded behind his back.
You mean that Grand Council couldn't make a decision? How predictable. But then I suppose I'll die of old age before your lot agrees on something, especially with Samos close by.
Your grandmother, too.
I have no grandmother, he says sharply. You heard her yourself. She's no blood of mine.
The memory sours Maven. He quickens his step, crossing the floor in a few even strides before turning back again. Despite his calm exterior, he seems manic in these moments, dangling by a thinning thread. I try not to look at his eyes as they glint, alight with a fire close enough to burn.
What are you doing here? I have to say, I didn't enjoy taunting you half as much as when you were my prisoner.
I shrug, watching him with ticking eyes. You're not my prisoner.
Cal's yours. He waves a hand. What difference does it make?
A great deal of difference.
I feel the frown tug at my face, the familiar sadness welling up inside me. He sees it behind my own mask of indifference.
Oh, he murmurs, stopping in the center of the room. He peers at me intensely, as if he can stare through my skull and into my brain, the way his mother did. But he doesn't need to read my mind to know what I'm thinking or know what his brother has done.
So a decision has been made.
Just one, I whisper. Maven takes a single step forward. I'm the danger here, not him. And he's careful to stay out of my reach.
Let me guess. You Reds gave him a choice. The same choice you gave him months ago?
Something like that. His lips curl, showing teeth, but not in a smile. No matter what else, he doesn't enjoy seeing me in pain, physical or otherwise.
He didn't surprise you, did he?
No.
Good.
I told you just as much.
Cal follows orders. He'll be following his father's wishes until the day he dies.
Maven looks almost apologetic as he speaks. Regretful, even. Sorry for what his brother became.
I'm sure Cal shares the feeling. He'll never change. Not for you. Not for anyone.
Like Maven, I don't need weapons to hurt. Just words.
That isn't true, I tell him, looking him in the eye, fully. He tips his head, clucking his tongue like I'm a child to be scolded. I thought you had learned by now, Mare. Anyone can betray anyone. And he's betrayed you once again.
He takes one more daring step forward, a few feet away now. I can hear the breath hissing through his teeth, like he's trying to taste the air in my lungs.
Can't you admit what he is?
He murmurs. It sounds like begging. The last request of a dead man. I raise my chin, holding his gaze.
Flawed.
Just like the rest of us.
His snarl reverberates deep in my chest. He's a silver king, a brute, a coward, a stone who will never move and can never change.
That isn't true, I repeat in my head. All these months have proven that, but nothing more so than a few minutes ago. When he chose, even with his grandmother hanging at his shoulder, fair wages, no conscription. Steps that seem small, but are also gigantic. Inches for miles.
But he is changing, I say, my voice steady, drawing this out. I'm taunting him.
Maven pales as I speak, unable to move.
Slower than we need. But I see it. A glimmer of who he could be. He's making himself into someone else.
Finally, I lower my eyes as the cracks in Maven's mask begin to show.
I don't expect you to understand that.
He grits his teeth, furious, and a bit confused.
Why?
Because every change in you was not your own.
The razor-edged words tumble, cutting as they go. He flinches, blinking quickly.
Thank you for the reminder, he replies. I so needed it.
I draw my last blade, ready to drive it deep into his heart, and perhaps make him feel one piece of what he lost, if only a fleeting sensation.
You know Cal hunted for someone who could fix you, I tell him.
Maven's mouth flaps open and closed, searching for something cunning or at least clever to say. He only manages a stammering,
What?
In Montfort, I explain. He had the premier search for a new blood, an ardent, some kind of whisper, powerful enough to undo whatever your mother did.
It almost hurts to see the flickers in him, tiny flashes of emotion beyond rage or hunger. They fight to the surface, but whatever Ilara did holds fast. His face goes still, slack as he listens.
But no one like that exists. And even if they did, there's no changing what you are. I realized that a long time ago, when I was your prisoner. But your brother, he didn't believe you were truly gone until today, when he looked into your eyes.
Slowly, the fallen king sits down in the chair opposite mine. His legs stretch out before him, and he slumps, letting go of his steel spine.
Numb, he runs a hand through his hair, fingering the curling black locks.
So like Cal's hair, like his father's hair. He stares at the ceiling, wordless, unable to speak. I imagine Maven in quicksand, fighting to climb out, fighting the impossible nature his mother gave him. It's no use. His face turns to stone again, his eyes narrowed and icy, doing all they can to ignore what his heart wants to feel.
There's no way to complete a puzzle with missing pieces or put together shattered glass, I mumble, only to myself, repeating what Julian told me weeks ago.
Maven sits up, drawing his back straight. One hand circles his wrist, touching the skin where his bracelet used to be. Without it, he's powerless, useless. He doesn't even need Arvin guards.
Senra and Iris are going to drown you all, he hisses. At least I'll be dead before they get their hands on me.
What a consolation. I would not have liked to watch you die.
The admission is small and matter of fact. There is no agenda to it, only the ugly, naked truth.
Will you enjoy watching me?
At least I can respond with some truth of my own.
Part of me will.
And the rest?
No, I whisper. I won't enjoy it.
He smiles.
That's enough for me. A better goodbye than I deserve.
And what do I deserve, Maven?
Better than we ever gave you.
The door bangs open before I can ask what he means. I start to rise, expecting guards to usher me out, now that I'm no longer part of the coalition. Instead, I find Farley and Davidson standing over us. She glares at Maven with more fire than even Cal could muster, and I expect her to skin him alive in front of us.
General Farley?
Maven drawls. He might be trying to goad her into doing the deed before his brother can. She only snarls in reply, like a beast. Davidson is more polite, ushering someone else into the room. I notice that the hall behind him is empty. The door guard's gone.
So sorry to interrupt, the Premier says.
He gestures and his companion, the Montfort new blood, Arezzo, steps into the chamber. I blink at her, confused, but only for a second. She's a teleporter, like Shade, and her hands are reaching.
It's time we all go,
Davidson sighs, looking between us. I jolt as Arezzo grabs my wrist, but I'm not the only one she's taking. Before the room disappears, squeezing to nothing, I see Maven, his white face, paler by the second,
his blue eyes wide with rare shock, and Arezzo's hand on his own.
27. Evangeline. The throne room feels empty without the Reds. Colder somehow. Annabelle is stupid if she thinks we can coronate Cal tomorrow. Foolish, eager woman. No king of Norda can be crowned anywhere but the capital, and it will take a few days at least to stabilize Harbor Bay before anyone can leave for Archeon. There's also the High Houses who were loyal to Maven. They'll need to kneel, pledge themselves to Cal, and be present at any coronation, if the country is to pull itself back together. I say none of this, of course. Let them figure it out for themselves. An unstable King Tiberius will hardly have time for marriage. Unfortunately, he has Julian Jacos, and the singer lord is more adept at politics than he has ever let on. He overrides Annabelle and suggests they wait a week before the coronation. Cal is happy to take his advice in this and other matters, too. Even now, Cal slumps on his throne, looking drained by the battle and the aftermath. Mostly the aftermath. He keeps stealing glances at the door, too, willing Mare to return. But it's been almost an hour. She and her companions are probably long gone by now, fleeing to the distant mountains of Montfort. Her family is there, waiting. She'll be happy to go back to them. I wish I could do the same and escape back to the Rift. Or to Montfort, a voice whispers. Figures flash in my head, the Premier and his husband presiding over our dinner, hands clasped, relaxed and self-assured, allowed to be who they are. I touch a finger to my temple, trying to massage away the low, dull ache in my skull. Everything seems impossible right now. Elaine isn't in the throne room, but she is close by. She suffered the journey with my parents, arriving this afternoon. I'm itching to be free of this council, if only to steal a few hours with her. I don't know how many I have left. "I'll send out the word," Julian says, hands folded as he stands at Cal's side. Without the Reds, the raised dais of the throne room is hilariously lopsided. "The lords and ladies of the High Houses will be summoned to the capital in a week's time, and you'll be waiting, happy to receive them. Afterward, we can crown you as king." He sounds less than thrilled. Cal barely nods. He wants to be done with all this. He doesn't notice Annabelle in her bronze eyes, now fixed on Julian. Both hope to win the ear of a king, seeking to be highest in his favor, like children vying for a parent's attention. I'd bet on Annabelle. She has the stomach for court, and the spine to eliminate anyone who might threaten her grasp on her grandson. I sigh to myself, already exhausted by the thought of a life chained to him. It excited me once, the lure of a queen's power. I like to think Elaine changed me, but I loved her long before, even when I told myself she was just a pawn like Sonya Iral, a silver lady to do my bidding and back my machinations. I think the war has done something to me, put a fear in me I never had before. Not for myself, but for Ptolemus and Elaine. The ones I love most, and would kill to protect. Sacrifice everything to keep safe and close. I've tasted a crown now, and I know it doesn't compare. Father does not share the sentiment, nor will he let me abandon my duties. I haven't mentioned my suspicions about the last piece of Annabelle and Julian Steele, not to him. I could be wrong. Maybe Queen Senra and Iris were satisfied with Solon Iral, eager to hand over a king for a single drop of vengeance. You know that isn't true. Neither of them is a fool. They wouldn't pay such a high price for such a small prize. Because the true prize is your father. I glance at him sidelong, noting the set of his shoulders, proud and straight beneath the curves of his chromium armor, polished so well I can see my reflection in it. I look afraid, my eyes wide and darting, ringed with dark makeup to hide the circles beneath my eyes. I fought well yesterday, enough to keep myself and my brother alive while so many of our kin died. Father hasn't said a word about it. Nothing to indicate he's happy that his children, his legacy, survived. Volo Samos is as hard as the steel we came from, all sharp edges. Even his beard is manicured and pruned to mathematic perfection. I have his coloring, his disposition, and his hunger. But now we yearn for different things. He wants power, as much of it as he can consume. I want freedom. I want my own fate. I want the impossible. Now, as for the royal wedding, Annabelle begins, but I can't stand it any longer. Excuse me, I snap, not bothering to look at any of them as I go. It feels like a surrender, but no one stops me, not even Father. No one says a word. I'm barely up the grand staircase before my mother cuts across my path. She almost hisses in anger, imitating one of her snakes. How such a small woman can take up an entire hallway, I'll never understand. Hello, Mother. Don't worry, I'm all right, not a scratch on me, I mutter. She waves off the greeting. Like Father, she doesn't seem to care, or mind, that I faced death yesterday. Really, Evangeline, she scolds, planting her jeweled hands on her hips. Today she favors pale green clothing. Her nose twitches slightly, and I can tell I don't have her undivided attention. The rest is in a mouse still watching the council. You can climb the walls of Fort Patriot, but a simple meeting is too much for you. I shudder, trying not to think about the battle. With some effort, I push the memory away. I hardly enjoy wasting my time, I tell her with a sneer. She rolls her eyes as only a mother can. Discussing your own wedding? There's no discussion to it, I scoff. I have no say, so why does it matter if I'm there? Besides, Tali will tell me everything later. All of Father's commands, I add, spitting out the last word like a bad taste. Mother seems to coil, taut and dangerous. You act like this is some kind of punishment. I raise my chin. All over my body, the steel threads of my gown tighten with my anger. Isn't it? She reacts like I've slapped her and insulted her entire bloodline. I don't understand you, she says, throwing up her hands. This is what you want, what you've worked for your entire life. I have to laugh at her blindness. No matter how many eyes my mother sees through, she will never see through mine. My laughter unsettles her, at least. I glance at her brow, tracing her braid blooming with gemstones. Let no one say Laurentia Viper does not play the part of a queen well. All this for that. A crown suits you, Mother, I sigh. Don't change the subject, Eve, she says, exasperated, as she closes the distance between us. With all the warmth she can muster, she puts both hands to my arms as if to pull me into an embrace. I keep still, rooted. Slowly, her fingers run up and down my arms, rubbing my bare skin. The image is almost maternal, far more than I'm used to. It's almost over, darling. No, it is not. Deliberate, I step out of her grasp. The air is warmer than her hands, so cold they could be reptilian. She looks pained by the sudden distance, but holds her own ground. I'm going to have a bath, I tell her. Keep your ears and eyes away from me while I do. Mother purses her lips. She makes no promises. Everything we do is for your own good. I turn to go, my dress swishing in my wake as I walk from her. Keep telling yourself that. By the time I get back to my rooms, I feel like breaking something, smashing a vase or a window or a mirror. Glass, not metal. I want to shatter something I cannot put back together. I resist the urge, mostly because I don't want to clean up the ensuing mess. There are red servants left in Ocean Hill, but few. Only those who wish to continue their profession, at better compensation, will still serve in the palace here, or in any silver employ. I wonder how far the ripples of Cal's decision will travel. How much will change? Red equality will have far-reaching consequences, and not just for the tidiness of my bedroom. I step deeper into my chamber, throwing open the windows as I go. Late afternoon in the bay is a beautiful time, filled with golden light and a fragrant sea breeze. I tried to find some comfort in it, but it just makes me angrier. The high keening of the gulls seems to taunt me. I think about skewering one, just for target practice. Instead, I throw back the soft blankets of the bed and start to crawl in. A nap is better than a bath. I just want this day to end. I freeze when my hand slides over paper amid the silk. The note is short and small, written in tight, looping script. Nothing like Elaine's elegant, ostentatious cursive. I don't recognize the penmanship, but I don't have to. Very few people would leave me secret notes, and even fewer could actually get access to my bed. My heartbeat quickens in my chest, breath catching. We are right to call the Scarlet Guard rats. I think they might actually live in the walls.
I apologize I could not give you this invitation in person, but the circumstances allow little else. Leave Norda. Leave the Rift. Come to Montfort. Allowances will be made for you and for Lady Elaine. You will be welcome in the mountains, free to be as you wish. Abandon this empty shell of a life. Don't subject yourself to that fate. The choice is in your own hands and no one else's. We ask nothing in return.
I almost crumple Davidson's note at such naked dishonesty. Nothing in return. My simple presence is a gift in itself. Without me, Cal's alliance to the Rift will be in jeopardy. His only remaining ally might waver. It's a way for Davidson and the Scarlet Guard to pull him back into their grasp.
If you agree, order a cup of tea to your room. We'll take care of the rest. D.
The words burn, branding themselves into my mind. I stare at them for what feels like hours, but only a few minutes pass. The choice is in your own hands. Nothing could be further from the truth. Father will chase me to the ends of the earth, no matter who stands in his way. I'm his investment, part of his legacy. What will you do? A familiar voice asks, sweeter than a song. Elaine blooms into existence across the room, silhouetted against a window. Still beautiful, but with none of her glow. The sight makes me ache. I glance at the note in hand. There's nothing I can do, I mutter. If, I can't even say the words aloud, even to her. It will only make things worse, for me and for you. She doesn't move, no matter how much I want her to cross the room. Her eyes remain far away, fixed on the city and the ocean. You really think things aren't already worse for me? Her whisper, fragile and soft, breaks my heart. My father would kill you, Elaine. He would kill you if he thought, if he knew how tempted we are by this, I say, tightening my grip on the note. And what about Tali? I can't leave him alone, the only heir to the throne of a small and precariously positioned kingdom. The letters of the note seem to blur and swirl. I'm crying, I realize, with a sick jolt. Fat tears land on the paper one by one. The ink bleeds, blue and wet. Evangeline, I don't know how much longer I can live like this. The admission is small, matter of fact. Her face crumples and I have to turn away. Slowly I rise from the bed and walk past her. Red hair flashes at the edge of my vision. She doesn't follow me into the bathroom, leaving me to think. Hands shaking, tears endless, I do as I told my mother I would. I draw myself a bath and sink the note in the water, letting the words, the offer, and our future drown. As I lie back into the warmth, I feel sick with myself, with my cowardice, with everything in my rotted life. I dip my head back and submerge myself, letting the bathwater replace any tears still fresh on my cheeks. Underwater, I open my eyes to the strange, rippling world beneath the surface. I exhale slowly, watching the bubbles drift and burst. I decide I can do one thing, and one thing alone, about all of this. I can keep my mouth shut, and let Julian and Annabelle play their games. My hair is still wet at dinner, coiled into a neat spiral at the base of my neck. My face is bare, too. No makeup, no war paint, no use for any of my usual trappings among family, though Mother doesn't seem to realize that. She's dressed for a state dinner, even though it's just the five of us dining in the grand salon of my father's chambers. Mother glitters, as always, poured into a long-sleeved and high-necked gown of black material that glistens purple and green like oil. Her crown is still there, too, woven into her braided hair. Father has no use for a crown of his own right now. He's intimidating no matter what he does or doesn't wear. Like Ptolemus, he is simple in unadorned clothing, our silver and black. Elaine looks serene next to him, her eyes dry and empty. I pick at my food, silent as I have been throughout the last two courses. My parents speak enough for all of us, though Ptolemus edges words in now and then. As before, I still feel sick, my belly roiling with unease. Because of my parents and what they want from me, because of how much I'm hurting Elaine, and because of what I've done as well. I could be dooming my own father with my silence. His kingdom, too. But I just can't say the words aloud. "I think Ocean Hills kitchens are taking the brunt of the young king's new proclamations," Mother observes, pushing the food around on her plate. Usually delicious courses have been replaced with bland, simple fare. Plain chicken, lightly seasoned, with greens, boiled potatoes, and some kind of watery sauce. An easy meal for anyone to prepare. Even me. I suppose the red cooks of the palace have taken their leave. Father slices a piece of chicken in two, the motion vicious and cutthroat.
"It won't last," is all he says, the words carefully chosen. "What makes you think that?"
Tolly, the treasured heir, gets the rare privilege of questioning Father without any threat of consequence. That doesn't mean Father will answer. He says nothing, continuing to chew the tasteless meat with a grimace. I respond instead, trying to make my brother see what I do. "He'll force Cal, however he can," I gesture at our father. "Prove that the country needs red labor somehow." Dear Tolly furrows his brow, thoughtful.
"It will still have red labor. Reds need to eat too, with fair wages,
and who pays those wages?" Mother snaps, looking at Tolly like he's some kind of imbecile. Odd for her. She dotes on him most of the time, more than she does on me.
"Certainly not us."
She goes on and on, spearing her dinner with tight, jerking motions. The twitchy speed of a rabbit, maybe.
"It isn't right. It isn't natural."
I run the meager proclamations over in my head, announced and effective immediately. Fair wages, freedom of movement, equal punishment and protection under silver law, and...
"What about conscription?" I ask aloud. Our mother slaps her hand on the table.
"Another folly. Conscription is a good incentive. Work or serve. Without the latter, why would anyone choose the former?" It's a circular conversation, and I breathe heavily through my nose. Across the table, Elaine shoots me a warning glance. Obviously, I don't care for our lack of servants either, and the new world Cal wants to build will result in great upheaval, mostly for silvers accustomed to our traditional place. It won't last. It can't last. Silvers won't allow it. But they do in Montfort, just like Davidson said. Their country was built from one like ours. I remember something else he said, only to me, back in the mountains. He stood too close, whispered too quickly, but the shock of his words hit home. You are denied what you want because of what you are. A choice you never made. A piece of yourself you cannot change and do not want to change. I've never thought myself akin to Reds in any way. I'm a silver-born lady, a princess made by the accomplishments of a powerful father. I was meant to be a queen. And but for the longing in my heart, the odd changes to my nature I've only begun to understand, I would be one. Davidson was right in Montfort. Like Reds, I am different from what my world demands I be. And I am not worse for it. Under the table, Ptolemus grabs my hand, his touch kind but fleeting. I feel a burst of love for my brother, as well as another burst of shame. One last chance, then. I assume Elaine will come with us to Archaon, I say aloud, looking between my parents. They exchange a pointed glance, one I know well and do not like. Elaine drops her gaze, staring at her hands beneath the table. She'll have to stand with the rest of her house, pledge loyalty with Haven, I explain coolly, my reasoning sound enough. But not for Mother, apparently. She puts down her fork with a clang of metal on porcelain. Princess Elaine is your brother's wife, she says, emphasizing the words. They sound like nails on glass. She speaks like Elaine isn't even here. It sets my teeth on edge. And your brother, as well as our family, has already proven himself loyal to King Tiberius. There's no need for her to make the journey. She will return home to Ridge House. A flush colors the tops of Elaine's cheeks. Still, she bites her tongue, knowing better than to fight this battle herself. I push out an exasperated breath. Long journey. What a load of... Well... As a princess of the Rift, she should be at the coronation, to show the kingdom who we are. The pictures and recordings will go out all over the Rift as well as Norda. Our kingdom should know its future queen, shouldn't they? My argument is shaky at best, and it sounds as desperate as I feel. I hate reminding anyone, most of all myself, of Elaine's title, because it comes from my brother, not from me.
It's not your decision.
Father's glare used to shut me up, stop me cold when I was a child. Sometimes I would run from him, but that landed me worse punishments. So I learned to stare back, in spite of my own fear, to meet what terrifies me head on. She doesn't belong to him or to you, I hear myself growl, sounding like one of my mother's great cats. I don't know how much longer I can live like this, she said before, and neither do I. Her jaw works furiously as she grinds her teeth together, unable to speak. Tali leans forward, as if he can defend me from our parents. Eve, he murmurs, if only to end this before things take an even worse turn. Mother throws back her head and laughs, the noise horrendous and sharp. I feel dismissed. Spit upon, diminished by someone who is supposed to love me. Does she belong to you, Evangeline? She croons, still smirking. I want to slap her. The fear in me melts to anger, iron turning to steel. We belong to each other, I reply, forcing down a sip of wine. Elaine's eyes snap to mine. They burn me through. I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my life, Mother scoffs, shoving her plate away. This is inedible. Again, Father glares at me.
It won't last, he says again,
and I think it's an answer to us both. Mirroring my mother's actions, I push away my plate of untouched food. We'll see, I mutter to myself. I've had enough of this. All of this. Before I can leave the table, storm away for a second time, Annabelle Larrilan enters the room, her guards on her heels. Even she isn't presumptuous enough to face down a Samos brood without protection. My apologies, she says quickly, nodding her head. Her own crown gleams, reflecting the fading light with a warm flash. For the interruption. When confronted with Queen Annabelle, Mother quickly takes on the mantle of Queen Laurentia. She improves her already flawless posture, drawing up her spine and dropping her shoulders. With an imperious gaze, she turns to look at Cal's grandmother. "I assume you have a reason?" The Laurelan Queen nods. "Maven Kalor is gone." Next to me, Ptolemus exhales. He almost smiles. So do my parents, both of them glad to finally be rid of Maven. I only wish I could have seen it done, to know it is finally over for the monstrous boy who plagued us all for so long. My brother speaks first, shifting to look at Annabelle head-on.
"Did Cal do it himself?"
Her expression turns stony. "I mean, he isn't here." I feel a slight pressure, the slow squeeze of my bracelets tightening at my wrists. On the table, the silverware starts to tremble. Not with my own anger or Ptolemus's, but with our father's. Volo curls one fist on the table, and the knives and forks curl with it. Father narrows his eyes.
"He escaped?"
"Improbable, but not impossible. Many Silvers are still loyal, some of House Haven. They could sneak into the palace easily, stow him away, pull him out." My mind spins through the possibilities. Haven interference would be the worst, because it could blow back on Elaine. Annabelle shakes her head, her scowl deepening with every passing second.
"It doesn't seem to be so," she hisses.
Mother sucks in a sharp breath. "Then," I finish the thought for her, "he was taken." The old queen curls her lip.
"Yes."
"By the Reds," I murmur. For a quivering moment, I think Annabelle might explode. She bares her teeth.
"Yes."
The sun has fully set by the time we reach Cal's quarters. Crowding into the large salon where he met us all yesterday, he paces furiously, still dressed in his court regalia, including the rose-gold crown. He stalks around his Uncle Julian, seated primly in one of the seats with his legs crossed and arms folded. A woman leans up behind him, pale hands planted on Julian's narrow shoulders. Sarah Skonos, the skin healer. She says nothing, letting the pair talk as she weighs their words.
"The intent is quite obvious," Julian stops himself as we troop in. "Two council meetings in one day? What a treat," he says dryly. "Quinn Laurentia, interesting to see you." Instead of glaring at the singer lord, Mother dons the falsest smile she can muster. It has the same effect.
"Lord Jacos," she purrs, careful to keep her distance.
I'm quietly glad Elaine isn't with us, having returned to my chambers. Her presence would simply put too much strain on an already stressful situation. Father wastes no time, swooping into a chair like a bird of prey finding a perch. He stares at Cal as he continues pacing.
"So, your brother is in enemy hands."
Across the floor, Julian purses his lips.
"Enemy is a strong word."
"They aren't with us any longer,"
Father replies, not bothering to check his tone against anyone.
"They stole a valuable hostage. That makes Montfort and the Scarlet Guard our enemies."
Still circling, Cal puts a hand to his chin. He meets Father's gaze.
"And what do you propose we do about it, King Volo?"
he asks.
"You want me to take our still-recovering armies, gather the fleet, and assault a distant nation to win back one useless, broken teenager? I don't think so."
I can almost see the hairs on Father's neck rise. He sets his jaw.
"As long as Maven breathes, he's a threat to Norda."
Cal is quick to nod, gesturing with an open palm.
"On that we can agree."
Usually any destabilization of Cal's fledgling reign would be cause for celebration, but I find little to cheer here. Instead, I take a seat of my own, leaning back with a huff.
Most of the high houses will still swear their loyalty to you, I say aloud, speaking mostly to myself. They know he's finished. Above me, Cal clucks his tongue in a very annoying fashion. I imagine cutting it out of his head.
That isn't good enough. We need a united country if we're going to fight off the Lakelands and Piedmont.
Behind us, Annabelle shuts the door and crosses the room to stand at her grandson's side. Her constant posturing is becoming tedious.
Those bloody rats can't wait for us all to kill each other so they can feed on our corpses.
I sneer up at her, remembering when she first came to the Rift. Then, she pledged that any Red Alliance would be fleeting, and Norda as we knew it would return to its traditions. If I'm not mistaken, I say as innocently as I can, didn't we plan to do the same? She looks at me with disgust as Cal continues his walk. He passes between us, shielding me for a moment. I meet his eyes, locking our gaze for a second. I can't speak, but I try to communicate what I can. He doesn't trust me, doesn't care for me, and I feel the same. But we need each other right now, no matter how much we might despise the thought. He turns away, moving to face my parents again.
We can't lose sight of the true danger right now. The Lakelands will return in full force with Piedmont backing their play.
Who knows what they promised Bracken for his help? Annabelle curses.
On her couch, my mother can't help but sneer.
Well, they didn't ally with the people who kidnapped his children, she says coolly, inspecting her nails. For a start.
I almost expect the Laralan queen to lay hands on my mother, but she doesn't move. Father maneuvers, his voice smooth.
We're quite able to do two things at once, King Tiberius.
Cal responds with his usual fire.
I'm not fighting two wars, Volo, and neither are you.
The command lingers, shocking us all. Even Mother draws back, looking to Father with fear in her eyes. For what he might do, how he could respond to such impudence. They stare each other down, one king against another. The contrast is jarring. Cal is young, a tested warrior but a floundering politician, driven by love, passion, some kind of fire that's always burning inside him. My father is deadly in many ways, with weapons or words, and he is infinitely cold, a calculating statue, his heart nothing but an empty hole. This could end everything, cut the rift from Norda and me with it. But no, Father would never do that. He has plans of his own, plans I cannot fathom, and they hinge on Cal keeping his throne. Father speaks slowly, as if restraining himself.
I'm not talking about a war with Montfort, or the red criminals they conspire with.
He lays his hands flat on his knees, displaying many rings and bracelets, all deadly under his command.
Hit them where it hurts. Take back whatever victory they thought they won here. Be a silver king, a king for your own people.
The singer lord speaks first. I brace myself for his voice, always afraid of the sound.
What are you suggesting?
Father doesn't condescend to look at Julian.
Your proclamations will cripple this country, he says to Cal. Erase them.
To my surprise, Julian laughs openly. The sound is oddly kind, a gentle sort of laughter. I'm not familiar with it.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty, but my nephew can't very well reverse what he did today. That isn't strength. That isn't kingly at all.
Now my father turns, fixing Julian with the full weight of his stare.
It's a fitting punishment for their red betrayal.
That strikes a chord in Cal.
I rule in Norda, not you,
he says, careful to speak as clearly as possible.
Or anyone else.
He adds, shooting a meaningful look at both his uncle and his grandmother.
The proclamations remain.
Father's response is quick.
Not in my kingdom.
Like Mother, I feel myself pull back as Cal steps forward,
closing the distance between himself and my father. It almost looks like a challenge.
Fine, he grinds out, glaring at the king of the rift.
Again they hold each other's gaze, never blinking, never breaking. I wish I could give both of them a shove, destroy all this for good. Annabelle intervenes before either side of the scale can tip. She cuts neatly between the kings, putting a hand to Cal's shoulder.
We'll pick this up in the morning, when we have clearer heads and a better view of the situation.
Behind them, Julian rises to his feet. He adjusts his robes.
I agree, Your Majesty.
Mother sees reason too, and she gestures for Ptolemus to follow. I stand with them, exhausted. Only Father remains sitting. He won't break first. Cal is less inclined to play such games. He turns away, dismissing all of us with a disinterested wave of one hand.
Very well, I'll see you all in the morning.
Then he pauses, looking back. Not at Father, but at me.
Actually, Evangeline, could I have a word?
I blink at him, feeling very sly indeed. The rest of the room could not look more confused.
In private.
Slowly, I sit back down as the rest go. Even Father, who prowls away with the rest of my family in tow. Only Ptolemus looks back, locking eyes with me for a moment. I wave him off. I'll be fine. There's nothing for him to worry about here. Julian is quick to acquiesce to his nephew's wishes, but Annabelle lingers.
Is this something I can help with? She asks, glancing between us.
No, Annabelle,
Cal replies. He walks with her, deftly herding her toward the door. She notes his intention with a sour twist of her lips, but bows her head. He is her king, and she is bound to obey. When the door shuts behind her, I relax a little, my posture drooping. Cal hesitates, his back to me, and I hear him take a shuddering breath. Crowns are heavy, aren't they? I say to him.
Indeed.
Reluctant, he turns around. Without the pressure to perform for the council and his family, Cal slumps as I do, exhausted by the days, ready to drop. I raise an eyebrow. Worth the price? Cal doesn't respond, walking silently to the chair across from mine. He leans backward, one leg bent, the other stretched. As he moves, I think I hear a click in his knee.
Is yours?
He finally says, gesturing to my empty brow. There isn't any animosity to his words, not like I expect. He's too tired to fight me, and I see no use now in fighting him. No. I don't think so. I mumble back. The admission surprises him.
Are you planning to do anything about it?
He says, voice colored by what could be hope. My plan is to do nothing, I think to myself. There isn't much I can do, I say aloud. Not with him holding my leash. He knows who I mean.
Evangeline Samos on a leash. Cal replies, forcing a false smirk.
Seems impossible.
I don't have the energy to correct him properly. I wish that were so, is all I can manage. He runs a hand over his face, squeezing his eyes shut for a moment.
Me too.
I have to scoff. The whining of men never ceases to amaze. What leash could there be on the King of Norda? I sneer at him.
More than a few.
You backed yourself into this corner. I shrug, unable to summon any real sympathy for the young man before me. They gave you a choice, one last chance to change things before they left. He bristles, leaning forward on his elbows.
And what would have happened if I'd done what they wanted? Thrown this infernal thing away?
To illustrate his point, he reaches up and grabs his own crown. He discards it with a thunk.
How dramatic. Chaos, riots, maybe another civil war, and certainly war with your father, maybe my own grandmother too.
Maybe.
Oh, don't preach to me, Evangeline.
He snaps, really starting to lose his temper.
You can sit here and blame me for all your problems if you want, but don't act like you don't have a hand in them.
I feel warmth rise in my cheeks as I